You're listening to Short Stories with Mrs. Sam, brought to you by the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon and Robin Hood Radio. Tune in every week on Sunday at 8:30 a.m. to WHDD 91.9 FM to catch our show. My name is Mrs. Sam. I'm the children's librarian at Hotchkiss Library of Sharon. We have all sorts of wonderful books there for children of all ages, and lovely crafting and story times besides. The weather is warm enough for us to have outside library programs. You can find information on all the events we hold for children and adults alike on our website, HotchkissLibraryofSharon.org, or on our Facebook page, facebook.com/HotchkissLibrary. We are open by appointment for browsing and borrowing and computer use every day of the week. This week, in celebration of Children's Book Week, which is May 3rd to 9th, the library has fun take-and-make bags full of everything you need to write your own picture book. Call us to schedule a time to pick one up. Included is a coloring book about drawing characters from famous illustrators, a blank book template, and tips on how to shape a story from a local author, Caroline Nostra. Today, we are reading short stories provided by permission from Penguin Random House from their collection Been There, Done That. This collection is all about how people come up with stories. First, I will read you the real-life account of what actually happened, followed by the short story the author wrote about it. My First True Frenemy: What Really Happened, by Julia Alvarez. When I was 10 years old, my family escaped the dictatorship of Trujillo in the Dominican Republic. My father had been part of an underground group of freedom fighters, several of whom were arrested. When the dictator's police began patrolling our house and keeping track of every move we made, my father knew that he was next. We managed to get out with the help of a contact in the CIA who forged a letter, inviting my father to come to the United States to study heart surgery. The dictatorship didn't allow many people to leave, so we were lucky to get our passports. Or so my parents kept telling my sisters and me once we landed in New York City. But I didn't feel lucky at all. I was terribly homesick for my cousins and my family. It was hard to make friends, because I didn't know English very well, and besides, my parents had gotten even stricter here. They were relieved to be in this country, but also afraid of it. They didn't know the rules. One wrong move, and we might be deported. You'd think I'd be happy once school started. A chance to make friends. A chance to get out of that tiny, confining apartment. But I was afraid, too. What if I didn't understand the teacher? Back then, immigrant children were not encouraged to be bilingual. What if I forgot and spoke Spanish to one of my sisters in the playground? Would we all be sent back home, where my father and maybe our whole family would be killed? The first day of school, I walked into a classroom full of American kids, who all seemed bigger, blonder, fairer, and smarter. They knew perfect English, after all. But then I spotted a girl who looked like one of my cousins. She turned out to be Dominican, too. But unlike me, she knew a lot of English, because she had been in the States for a while. Her father was some sort of diplomat. I didn't know much about what diplomats did. All I knew is that I finally had a friend to help me navigate my way in this new school and language. But when I got home, full of my good news, my parents were not happy at all. It turned out that this girl's father was a big supporter of the dictator, and that's why he had been appointed to represent our country. One wrong word from me, and the girl might tell her parents, who might communicate this information to the authorities back home. My uncles and their families would be wiped out, and even my own immediate family could be in danger. A few years before our arrival, Galindez, a Dominican exile who had criticized the dictator, had been kidnapped from New York City, taken back, tortured, and killed. Every day before I left for school, my mother would go through her list of reminders of what I had to be careful not to say to this girl. I tried to keep my distance, but she was so nice to me. She helped me with my homework. She explained things I didn't understand in English. She brought me treats her maid cooked. Yes, her family had a staff. Meanwhile, I had to invent stories about why I couldn't accept her invitations or reciprocate with gifts. I had to pretend that my parents were big supporters of the dictator. Late one night, we got a call in our apartment. The dictator had been assassinated by a rebel group, which included some of my uncles. My parents were elated. Our country would soon be free. We would be able to go back. My friend was not at school the following morning. In fact, I didn't know much about her after that day. In my memory, she just fades away, except for our last conversation. She told me that her parents had been crying ever since they got the horrible news. It was as if a family member had died. I couldn't tell her there was great rejoicing in my family. I didn't want to hurt her feelings. Also, for so many months I had been telling her stories about how my family also liked the dictator. I didn't know how to get over the tall barrier of lies I had been forced by circumstances to tell. So that was what happened in real life to Julia Alvarez, the author of this story. And here is the story that she wrote inspired by that. It's called Through the Chain Link Fence by Julia Alvarez, read by permission from Penguin Random House, from their collection, Been There, Done That, Writing Stories from Real Life. Through the chain link fence, Taddy could see her new school, a big stone building with bars on the bottom windows. Her heart pounded. She wondered if her mother could hear it above the noise of traffic on this busy city street. "It looks like a prison," Taddy whined. They had just escaped a dictatorship full of people in jail. Wasn't this country supposed to be better? Her mother sighed. She was sick and tired of Taddy's complaints. "I already explained it's to keep the burglars out." "But what would a burglar want to steal from a school?" Taddy persisted. Her mother was silent. "Mommy, will there be anybody I know?" In the Dominican Republic, her whole school had been full of cousins. Her mother sighed again. "I don't know." Before they arrived in this country, Mommy had known everything. But here in New York City, it seemed those three words were her mother's constant reply to every question Taddy asked. "Yo no sé." "What if I don't understand the English?" Taddy asked her mother in Spanish. Her mother leveled that look at her. Taddy didn't have to know any language to understand what it meant. "Not one more word from you." They had fled to the United States to be free, but her mother had gotten even stricter here. Taddy felt like Mommy was having no problem picking up where the dictator had left off. The last month on the island, police started patrolling their house and following Mommy and Poppy wherever they went, whenever they went out. Her father was in some kind of trouble with the dictator. "Why are the police after us?" Taddy kept asking. Her mother would turn that look on her. This wasn't a case of her mother not knowing. Mommy knew, but she was not about to tell Taddy. From her cousins, Taddy learned that her uncle and her father were in some kind of secret underground to get rid of the dictator and bring freedom to the country. When Taddy had asked her mother if it was true, Mommy had gone berserk, yanking her by the arm, hurrying her down the hallway, locking the bedroom door, and then yanking her again, this time into the walk-in closet, where Taddy had recently discovered some hidden guns she was punished for discovering. "You're going to get your father and all of us killed unless you keep quiet," her mother whispered fiercely. "Quiet about what?" "What your parents say or do at home, about what your uncles and aunts say in their houses." Her mother's list went on and on. How was Taddy supposed to remember so many things? She might as well not talk at all. Soon after their arrival in New York City, her father had taken her to see the Statue of Liberty. "Pray that good luck comes to everybody back at home," he told Taddy, touching the stone of the statue as if it were the Virgin in the cathedral. Now that they were free, Poppy had explained a bit more about the dictatorship. People who were suspected of being against the dictator were being incarcerated, tortured, killed. Her uncles were in danger. But soon, soon, soon... Her father never seemed to be able to finish that sentence. Soon, school started, but the situation back home wasn't any better. Taddy didn't care. She wanted to go back. Every night when her family said prayers, she burst into tears. She was so lonely. She missed her cousins terribly, and her uncles and aunts and her dog Luna, and the ponies on her grandfather's finca, and the taste of mangoes and guavas and coconut water, and the endless beaches with teensy crabs scuttling across the warm sand. Taddy's list was even longer than the list of things she hadn't been able to talk about back on the island. As Tati entered her class, her heart was a moth caught in a lampshade, trying to get free. She looked around at the boys and girls, none of them familiar, many with light coloring, most of them taller, older, and smarter looking than she. They had to be smarter. They knew how to speak English. Her teacher, a plump, kindly-looking nun, introduced herself, Sister Something. Even though Tati had learned classroom English back home, she couldn't make out what her teacher was saying. Americans spoke so quickly, their words all running together. Something, 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 Sister Something bent down so she was eye level with Tati. Her eyes were little bits of blue sky, which made her look even more religious than the dark habit and headdress she was wearing. She led Tati toward a desk by the window, and that's when Tati spotted her, a girl her size, with same dark curly hair. Lucy, this is Tati Castillo. She's Dominican, too. The nun smiled beneficently as Lucy greeted Tati with a burst of English. Even so, Tati could guess what Lucy was saying, because like most Dominicans, her face was so expressive. The minute the nun turned away, Lucy whispered, "Hablo español." They could speak in Spanish, but they had to be careful so as not to get caught. It was almost as if they were back home in the underground. During recess, the two girls chatted away in Spanish, falling silent only when Sister Zoe, that was the teacher's name, Lucy told Tati, or some other teacher approached them. Lucy was actually Lucia Ramos. She knew Tati was the Dominican nickname for Alta Gracia, the name you could never use in this country. Imagine, you'd have to be spelling it all the time. Hey, we could just say you're High Grace Castle, and I'm Lucy Branches, get it? I guess not, she answered herself after. Once you know English, you can tell a lot of jokes that most people won't get. Tati felt like one of those people now, so she changed the subject. How long have you been here? Almost 2 years, and before that, Washington, D.C., so that's how come I speak a lot of English. My father's the Dominican consul, Lucia went on to explain. Before Tati could ask what a consul was, Lucia asked her, "Where does your father work?" Tati wasn't ready to confess to Lucia that her father couldn't work as a doctor in this country. He had to pass the license exam, but first he had to learn English. He was taking a night class after working all day as a janitor in a hospital. They were living in a tiny apartment about the size of their living room, back at home. "At some hospital," Tati answered vaguely. At the end of the day, Tati and her new friend descended the front steps. A sleek black car pulled up in front of the school. The uniformed driver came around and opened the back door. A woman in dark glasses leaned out. Lucia introduced her mother. The mother seemed pleased that Tati was Dominican. She launched into a whole bunch of questions about Tati's family. What was her father's surname? Her mother's? Were they related to this or that other family with the same last names? This was so typical. Every time Dominicans meet, they started figuring out where they all belonged in the country's forest of family trees. It seemed everybody was related to everybody else. "Shall we give you a ride home?" But Tati could already see her mother coming down the street waving. "I made a friend, mommy." Those were the first words in Spanish out of Tati's mouth. Her mother smiled with relief. Tati knew mommy was worried about Tati's homesickness. "And guess what? Guess what?" Her mother could not guess. So Tati told her all about Lucia, the Dominican girl in class, who knew a lot of English, whose family had lived in Washington, D.C. "They must be rich, mommy. They have a big fancy car with a chauffeur. What's wrong?" Instead of that joyous look of a minute ago, mommy's face was washed of color. She asked Tati the first question. Mrs. Ramos had just asked her, "What was Lucia's last name?" "Ramos." Mommy stopped and turned to Tati. "What did you tell her? Tell me what you told her." Mommy had grabbed Tati's shoulders and was shaking her, as if they were back on the island, as if they hadn't gotten free after all. That night, when Papi got home from English class, there was a family conference in the small bedroom where they all slept. Papi explained that Señor Ramos was the Dominican consul, which meant he represented the dictator. "We left all the family there. We would not want them to be in danger. And the dictator has a long arm," Papi added. "Enemies of the regime have disappeared from here, too." "But this girl is my friend," Tati pleaded. Her father nodded sadly. "She is probably a very nice girl. But the dictator is an evil man. It's fine to be friends with this girl, but you have to be careful what you say. You have to keep your distance. You can't trust her with anything private. So what was the point of having a friend if you couldn't do any of the things friends did with each other? Then Mommy went through her whole list again, adding even more things Teddy must remember not to say. The Mommy dictatorship was never, ever going to go away. It was so confusing, being someone's friend, but your parents were her enemies, secret enemies at that. At every turn, Lucia asked questions about things on Mommy's Remember Not to Talk About It list. At first, Tati was suspicious. Maybe her friend was spying on the Castillos for her father. But the whole Ramos family seemed genuinely friendly, inviting Tati's parents to functions, sending them a Christmas card. Meanwhile, Tati had to keep inventing stories. Then she had to remember what she had invented so that Lucia wouldn't suspect her of lying. Tati's father had come to the U.S. to learn to do heart transplants so he could save lives back home. Her family supported the dictator. The reason she couldn't go over to Lucia's house was because she had to help her mother clean the apartment, wash the dishes, iron the clothes. "Don't you have a maid?" Lucia wanted to know. The maid had quit and taken a job cleaning in a hospital. "You poor thing," Lucia threw her arms around her. Tati felt like a creep. She wondered, was it a sin to lie, as much as she did, and to a friend? But she couldn't ask the priest a confession, because then she'd be talking about things on Mommy's list, which would be breaking the commandment about obeying your parents, which was definitely a sin. Late one night, the phone rang in the apartment. "They did it! They did it!" Papi cried out. Tati's uncles had killed the dictator. Mommy was on her knees, Papi knelt beside her. They were praying, laughing, hugging each other. It was good when evil people died, but should good people be so happy about killing someone bad? The older Tati got, the more confusing life was becoming, like having two languages. You had a lot more choices, but you also had a lot more chances to make mistakes, say the wrong thing, get people killed, and sometimes even kill them yourself. The next morning, Lucia was not at school, but Tati was not surprised. Probably, the Ramos family had not gotten much sleep either. But days went by and Lucia did not return to class. Meanwhile, it was all over the news. The dictator had been deposed. Tati's uncles were now heroes. A week later, during recess, the black car pulled up to the curb. The chauffeur came around. First Lucia, then her mother climbed out. "Lucia!" Tati was so relieved to see her friend. Lucia exchanged a few words with her mother. Then, as Mrs. Ramos climbed the steps into the building, Lucia walked over to the chain-link fence. Her eyes were red, her face puffy. She peered at Tati through links with the same look as Mammy's when she was upset with Tati. "Your family killed our Jefe. You lied to me. All these months you pretended you were our friends." "I am your friend," Tati told Lucia, many lies to protect her family, but this was the truth. "We have to leave. We can't stay here. Poppy's already getting death threats. Mommy came to get my stuff." Now Lucia was sobbing so hard, Tati thought her own heart would break. She wanted to reach out and comfort Lucia, to assure her they were friends, even if their parents were enemies. But Tati couldn't come up with the words to express her feelings. She was forgetting her Spanish, and her English had not yet caught up with everything in her heart. Mrs. Ramos was already heading down the steps, carrying a stuffed shopping bag. Sister Zoe by her side. "Lucia," she called. "Okay, Mommy." Lucia turned back to Tati. She had stopped crying, but her face was flushed. Her eyes were two windows, about to be clamped shut against an oncoming storm. But before they closed on her forever, Tati caught a glimpse of her friend thinking of the worst thing she could say to wound her new enemy. "Te odio." Lucia spit the words out in Spanish, and then, as if to make them doubly strong, she repeated them in English. "I hate you!" She clenched her fingers around the links as if they were Tati's eyes that she wanted to scratch out. Tati drew back, feeling the force of that emotion. No one had ever said they hated her in her whole life. Later, Tati would think of all the things she could have said, a whole list of explanations, apologies, or, on angry days, words more hurtful back. She wanted a different ending to their story instead of what she remembered. Lucia climbing in the car, never looking back, as Tati watched from the other side of a fence that had always been there between the two friends. Thank you for listening to Short Stories with Mrs. Sam. It's brought to you by the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon and Robin Hood Radio. Tune in every week on Sunday at 8:30 a.m. to WHDD 91.9 FM to catch our show. Today we read Through the Chainlink Fence by Julia Alvarez, brought to you by permission from the Penguin Random House, from their collection Been There, Done That. All sounds in this recording are from freesound.org.